if you are familiar with the, how it is written, so I don't have to write. But if you don't, if you want me to write, I can write it on the board. What is it?
Would you please, because I have not a lot of basic comments.
Some of them are in the Tree of Enlightenment, but not all of them.
Not because you, I don't think that everybody has the whole book, the Tree of Enlightenment. Do you have?
No, but some of them are in the first, in chapter 14, but not all of them.
Not all of them.
We just put these on the board, these major Hinayana schools that I mentioned yesterday when I was talking about the development of schools, right?
Erase it and erase this.
What do you know what
there? is the most expensive. Yeah.
The budget is.
Yeah. Okay, I'm invited here. That's the message. Vaishnashika, another two names appear in the post of the lecture. The Vaibhashikas who rely on the commentaries and Sutrantika who relied on the sutras. Okay, these are the schools. No. These are Vaibhashika and Sutrantika comes here.
These are all pre-Mahayana schools. Call them Hinayana, call them
Abhidhamma.
Yes, they are the schools, yes. They emerge in the Food Council, right?
Yes.
The outcome of these schools are in the Food Council.
It's a Hinayana school.
Yeah, they are also.
Or in order to avoid using a loaded name, can call them Abhidhamika school. But they are not Mahayana school.
They are not yet. They are still on the Hinayana side. They are. Yes.
It is a Sarvastivada school. There are connections between these schools. Actually, the Vibhashika is a development of the Sarvastivada school. It's a further development. It's a
subset
or an evolution of the Sarvastivada school. So that is correct. Yes, it is. Part of the Sarvastivada tradition. Sometimes you will see references to the Mula Sarvastivada and the Vibhashika. Mula Sarvastivada meaning the base, the root Sarvastivada school, and Vibhashika meaning the developed or evolved Sarvastivada.
Is it okay? Is ready?
Yeah. I have some question.
Yeah.
Sometimes I'm confused whether
Mahasarikas
and
Sarvastivadas
also included under the Mahayana school.
No, we can't, but I don't think anybody seriously regards them. Certainly the Sarvastivada and the Mahasarikas, they are not Mahayana schools proper. The whole point of my lecture yesterday was to suggest, to say that these schools have Mahayana tendencies, they have Mahayana elements, but they're not yet fully fledged Mahayana schools. They still belong to the earlier, to the pluralistic tradition. Mahasanghikas have some Mahayana tendencies. Some books will say the Mahayana, the Mahasanghikas are the forefathers of the Mahayana. But even the people who hold that view, and that's not entirely my view, but even the people who say that the Mahasanghikas are the forefathers of the Mahayana, they also, in that case, also the Mahasanghikas are not Mahayana. The father is not the son. No.
So what are the Mahayana schools?
Well, we will talk about the Mahayana schools actually in the following week. I will start to talk about it a little bit this week. The Mahayana schools, the principal Mahayana schools are Madhyamaka and Yogacara.
Well, then we can start. Good morning to everybody, because we should have said a long time before, but anyway. So yesterday, when Professor Santina was giving the lecture, his about the origin of Mahayana, the main point of his talk was that to trace the origin of Mahayana, we don't really go to any other sources or go very far. It is in the life and life of Buddha and his career that gives us reason and many traces of Mahayana factors. Because when we see his life and his Buddha figure of Buddha and his life, his career is a great example of the Mahayana tradition, and especially in the second half of his lecture, when he was talking about the traces of Mahayana in the Pali canon, we have picked up few sutras which bring this fact very clear, that the Mahayana elements or Mahayana tendencies are very much we see in the Pali canon. The first thing I like to say when Buddha attained enlightenment, the thing arose in his mind that whether he should teach what he has realized to the people, or because his realization was very deep and profound and not too easy to understand, so whether it will be beneficial for the people to get this teaching, or he should keep this teaching to himself and go for parinirvana. But then the intervention of God Brahma Sahampati, he appeared and he requested Buddha that, no, Lord, that I think that there are people in this world that who has got the capacity to understand the teaching, so you must give them the teaching. So he mentioned, Professor Santina mentioned about, he mentioned the Arya Paryasena Sutta, which I'm going to read to you, because it is very important that when the theoretically know the facts, but also the read the suttas side by side, because it gives you the first-hand information about which way the Buddha has decided to teach the Dharma. I'm not going to read the whole sutta, because the suttas are very long and sometimes very repetitive. It takes long time. So I have picked up few relevant passages or sections. So I'm going to read through those. Then the thought occurred to me, this Dharma that I have attained is deep. hard to see, hard to realize, peaceful, refined, beyond the scope of conjecture, subtle, to be experienced by the wise. But this generation delights in attachment, is excited by attachment, enjoys attachment. For a generation delighting in attachment, excited by attachment, enjoying attachment, this or that conditionality and dependent co-arising are hard to see. This state too is hard to see. The resolution of all fabrications, the relinquishment of all acquisitions, the ending of craving, dispassion, cessation, unbinding, and if I were to teach the Dharma and others would not understand me, that would be tiresome for me, troublesome for me. As I reflected thus, my mind inclined to dwelling at ease, not to teaching the Dharma. That is what Buddha thought, that, you know, that this Dharma is very deep and hard to see, realize, and it is because the most of the worldly people are attached to they are attached to desire and attached to have got all the afflictions and impurity, so it will be very hard to see the Dharma. Then Brahma Sampati, having known with his own awareness the line of thinking in my awareness, thought, the world is lost, the world is destroyed. The mind of the Tathagata, that Arahant, the rightly self-awakened one, inclines to dwelling at ease, not to teaching the Dharma. Then just as a strong man might extend his flexed arm or flex his extended arm, Brahma Sampati disappeared from the Brahma world and reappeared in front of me. Arranging his upper robe over one shoulder, he knelt down with his right knee on the ground, saluted me with his hands before his heart, and said to me, Lord, let the Blessed One teach the Dharma. Let the one well gone teach the Dharma. There are beings with little dust in their eyes who are falling away because they do not hear the Dharma. There will be those who will understand the Dharma. The Brahma Sampati's main idea is there are some people who can understand the Dharma. They have got little dust in their eyes. So this means that they are not really submerged into the ignorance, delusion, and attachment of the world. They can understand. So please, that is what Brahma Sampati said. Having said that, he further said this. In the past there appeared an impure Dharma devised by the stain, throw open the door to the deathless. Let them hear the Dharma realized by the stainless one. Just as one standing on a rocky crack might see people all around below, so, O wise, one with all around vision, ascend the palace fashioned of Dharma, free from sorrow, behold the people submerged in sorrow, oppressed by birth and aging. Rise up, hero, victor in battle, O teacher, wander without death in the world, teach the Dharma, O Blessed One, there will be those who will understand. So he again and again persuaded Buddha that, please teach the Dharma, there will be people who will be benefited. Then having understood Brahma's invitation out of compassion, this is the one thing that he tried to say yesterday, Peter tried to say yesterday, that the compassion is one of the main factors in Mahayana. Out of compassion. Compassion for beings, I surveyed the world with the eye of an awakened one. As I did see, I saw beings with little dust in their eyes, and those with much, those with keen faculties, and those with dull, those with good attributes, and those with bad, those easy to teach, and those hard, some of them seeing disgrace and danger in the other world, just as in a pond of blue or red or white lotuses. Some lotuses, born and growing in the water, might flourish while immersed in the water without rising up from the water. Some might stand at an even level with the water, while some might rise up from the water and stand without being smeared by the water. So too, surveying the world with the eye of an awakened one, I saw beings with little dust in their eyes, and those with much, those with keen faculties, and those with dull, with those with good attributes, and those with bad, those easy to teach, and those hard, some of them seeing disgrace and danger. Some of them seeing disgrace and danger in the other world. They the simile of lotus is given. It just referring to the different capacities of people. They are submerged totally in the delusion of the world, and some are the little better, and some are they're high above, you know, they have got better capacities. Having seen this, I answered Brahma Sampati in verse, open are the doors to the deathless, to those with ears, let them show their conviction. Perceiving trouble, O Brahma, I did not tell people the refined sublime Dharma. Then Brahma Sampati, thinking the Blessed One has given his consent to teach the Dharma, bowed down to me and circling me on the right, disappeared right there. So it is very clear from this thing that, okay, that now Buddha has decided to take up his mission to teach, and he taught for next 45 years. So that is one incident that the Buddha, out of compassion, he decided to teach. And this is a very, very, very Mahayanistic in the character. And now the next point comes that his on the view of the right view. I'm reading from the Kachana Gota Sutta, that is from it is the Kachana Gota Sutta also is on the right view, is on right view. Dwelling at Savatthi, then Venerable Kachana Gota approached the Blessed One, and on arrival, having bowed down, sat to one side. As he was sitting there, he said to the Blessed One, Lord, right now, right view. It is said, to what extent is their right view? You know, so he was very much baffled, he was very much confused about what is right view. By and large, Kachana, this world is supported by, takes as its object as polarity. Polarity is the duality. You know, we think of two sides things. Talking about existence, we think about non-existence. Talk about good or bad, right or wrong, white or black. This kind of polarity, because this is one thing depends on the other. We think all the view of duality in polarity. Basic view is existence and non-existence. And in opposition to this view, the main point of this sutta is that in opposition to this view of existence and non-existence, Buddha didn't talk about the existence and non-existence, because these are the polarity which confuses people. Instead, he taught the four noble truths, or the four noble truths and middle way, and which is equal to interdependent origination. The teaching of interdependent origination, it is the teaching which avoids the existence and non-existence. Interdependent origination leads the appearance of world. It has twofold functions, leading to bondage or freedom. When we talk about interdependent origination, we think of imagination of a chain which has got, when we think about this chain, then all linked up together, all the 12 components, we think of bondage. It is linked together and it's bondage. But when we break the chain, it is liberation. So it is the interdependent origination. Is some way it is constructive, when we think about the chain as linked together, when it is deconstructive, when we break the chain, and that leads to freedom. And because we always think about the polarity, the existence, because we think that world exists. And that is, and then we think about world exists, then we think about the non-existence also. So this is about the right view. The third sutta I'm going to do it, and is the Agni Vachagota Sutta, and that is on the questions on the propositions that about the world and the Tathagata. I have heard that on one occasion the Blessed One was staying in Sabati at Jeta's Grove, Anathapindika Monastery. Then the wanderer Vachagota went to the Blessed One and on arrival exchanged courteous greetings with him. After an exchange of friendly greetings and courtesies, he sat to one side. As he was sitting there, he asked the Blessed One, "How is it, Master Gotama? Does Master Gotama hold the view the cosmos is eternal? Only this is true, anything otherwise is worthless?" "No." "Then does Master Gotama hold the view the cosmos is not eternal? Only this is true, anything otherwise is worthless?" "No." "Then does Master Gotama hold the view the cosmos is finite? Only this is true, anything otherwise is worthless?" "No." "Then does Master Gotama hold the view the cosmos is infinite? Only this is true, anything otherwise is worthless?" "No." "Then does Master Gotama hold the view the soul and the body are the same? Only this is true, anything otherwise is worthless?" "No." "Then does Master Gotama hold the view the soul is one thing and the body another? Only this is true, anything otherwise is worthless?" "No." "Then does Master Gotama hold the view after death a Tathagata exists? Only this is true, anything otherwise is worthless?" "No." "Then does Master Gotama hold the view after death a Tathagata does not exist? Only this is true, anything otherwise is worthless?" "No." "Then does Master Gotama hold the view after death a Tathagata both exist and does not exist? Only this is true, anything otherwise is worthless?" "No." "Then does Master Gotama hold the view after death a Tathagata neither exists nor does not exist? Only this is true, anything otherwise is worthless?" "No." "How is it, Master Gotama, when Master Gotama is asked if he holds the view the cosmos is eternal, after death a Tathagata neither exists nor does not exist, only this is true, anything otherwise worthless?" He says, "No." "In each case, seeing what drawback, then is Master Gotama thus entirely dissociate from each of these 10 positions?" Yeah, we talk about the 14 position, but lot of the places in the Pali Sutta we see the 10 position, but that is not very important, because one can make this neither or nor things again in the other proposition. But the position that the cosmos is eternal is a thicket of views, a wilderness of views, a contortion of views, a writhing of views, a fetter of views. It is accompanied by suffering, distress, despair, and fever, and it does not lead to disenchantment, dispassion, cessation to calm, direct knowledge, full awakening, unbinding. The position is the cosmos is not eternal, the cosmos is finite, the cosmos is infinite, the soul and body are the same, the soul and one, soul is one thing and the body another. After death, the Tathagata exists. After death, Tathagata does not exist. After death, Tathagata both exists and does not exist. After death, Tathagata neither exists nor does not exist. Does not lead to disentanglement, dispassion, cessation to calm, direct knowledge, full awakening, unbinding. Does Master Gotama have any positions at all? A position? Bhaccha is something that a Tathagata has done away with. What a Tathagata sees is that such is form, such is its origin, such is disappearance, such is feeling and rest of it. So the main point of the Tathagata doesn't have any position. If he is without a position, he doesn't say, because that, why he doesn't have a position? Because all this position leads to all this, lead to disentanglement, dispassion, cessation, and all these things. It doesn't lead to any, it is not conducive for the practice of the dharma, and it leads all dissatisfaction and suffering and so on and so forth. So Tathagata does not have any position of his own. Then again we go to Chula Malunka Sutta, and the simile of a wounded man. I think most of who are come from the Pali Theravada schools and who are ordained in Theravada, they must have know this sutta by heart probably. And it is the Chula Malunka Sutta is the Malunki Putta, he appeared to Buddha, and he put forward these questions. The cosmos is eternal, the cosmos is non-eternal, all this, the same questions to him. And then the Tathagata, I can just do this part of he reads. Malunka Putta alone in seclusion, this train of thought arose in his awareness. These positions are undeclared, set aside, discarded by the Blessed One. The cosmos is eternal, the cosmos is non-eternal, the cosmos is finite, the cosmos is infinite. The soul and the body are the same, the soul is one thing and the body another. After death, Tathagata exists, after death, Tathagata does not exist. After death, a Tathagata both exist and does not exist. After Tathagata death, a Tathagata neither exists nor does not exist. I don't approve. I don't accept that the Blessed One has not declared them to me. I will go and ask the Blessed One about this matter. He was very determined to go and ask the Blessed One. If he declares to me that the cosmos is eternal, that the cosmos is non-eternal, and the cosmos is finite or cosmos is infinite, that the soul and the body are the same, that the soul and one thing and the body another, and that after death Tathagata exists, that after death Tathagata does not exist, that after death Tathagata both exist and does not exist, or that after death Tathagata neither exists nor does not exist, then I will live the holy life under him. If he does not declare to me that the cosmos is eternal, or that after death Tathagata neither exists nor does not exist, then I will renounce the training and return to the lower life. So he's one of these guys that he's saying that, oh, I must get the right answer from him. Either he has to say, you know, to give the answer, or I'm going back to my home. So then when it was evening, Venerable Malunka Putta arose from the seclusion, went to the Blessed One. On arrival, having bowed down, he sat to one side. As he was sitting there, he said to the Blessed One, Lord, just now as I was alone in seclusion, this train of thought arose in my awareness. These positions are undeclared, set aside. And he repeats these things. And then he says that if it is not declared to me, then I will renounce the training and return to the lower life. Lord, if the Blessed One knows that cosmos, all these things again. Malunka Putta, did I ever say to the Buddha? Buddha replies to him. Now he says, Malunka Putta, did I ever say to you, come Malunka Putta, live the holy life under me, and I will declare to you that the cosmos is eternal or the cosmos is non-eternal? or the cosmos is finite and cosmos is infinite, or the soul and the body are the same, or the soul and the soul is one thing and the body another, or after death the Tathagata exists, or after death the Tathagata does not exist, or after death the Tathagata both exist and does not exist, or after death the Tathagata neither exists nor does not exist. No, Lord. Then did you ever say to me, Lord, I will live the holy life under the Blessed One, and in return He will declare to me that the cosmos is eternal, or the cosmos is non-eternal, or the cosmos is finite, or the cosmos is infinite, or the soul and the body are the same, or the soul is one thing and the body another, or after death Tathagata exists, or after death Tathagata does not exist, or after death Tathagata both exist and does not exist, or after death Tathagata neither exists nor does not exist. No, Lord. Now he is in trouble, no? Then that being the case, foolish man, who are you to be claiming grievances, making demands on anyone? Malankiputra, if anyone were to say, I won't live the holy life under the Blessed One, as long as he does not declare to me that the cosmos is eternal, or that after death Tathagata neither exists nor does not exist, the man would die. And those things would still remain undeclared by the Tathagata. Now he is giving the parable of a wounded man. It is just as if a man were wounded with an arrow, thickly smeared with poison. His friends and companions, kinsmen and relatives would provide him with a surgeon, and the man would say, I won't have this arrow removed until I know whether the man who wounded me was a noble warrior, a priest, a merchant, or a worker. He would say, I won't have this arrow removed until I know the given name and clan name of the man who wounded me, until I know whether he was tall, medium, or short, until I know whether he was dark, ruddy brown, and golden color, until I know his home village, town, or city, until I know whether the bow with which I was wounded was a long bow or crossbow, until I know whether the bowstring with which I was wounded was a fiber, bamboo, thread, sinew, hemp, or bark, until I know whether the shaft with which I was wounded was wild or cultivated, until I know whether the feathers of the shaft with which I was wounded were those of a vulture, a stork, a hawk, peacock, or another bird, until I know whether the shaft with which I was wounded was bound with the sinew of an ox, a water buffalo, a langur, or a monkey. He would say, I won't have this arrow removed until I know whether the shaft with which I was wounded was that of a common arrow, or carved arrow, or barbed, or calf tooth, or an oleander arrow. The man would die, and those things would still remain unknown to him. In the same way, if anyone were to say, I won't live the holy life under the Blessed One, as long as he does not declare to me that the cosmos is eternal, or that after death Tathagata neither exists nor does not exist, the man would die, and those things would still remain undeclared by the Tathagata. Malankiputra, it is not the case that when there is a view, the cosmos is eternal, there is living of the holy life. And it is not the case when that there is a view, the cosmos is non-eternal, there is the living of the holy life. When there is a view, the cosmos is eternal, and when there is a view, the cosmos is non-eternal, there is still birth, there is still aging, there is still death. There is the sorrow, lamentation, pain, despair, and distress, whose destruction I make known right in the here and now. So he says, these questions are useless questions, because we have to deal with what we experience. And what we experience suffering. That is all we experience. And we have to deal with that right here and now. And because if we try to answer all these unanswered questions, then what? The time will pass and we will die, you know, anyway. So it is to get rid of suffering, we have to practice the dharma, we have to know the teachings. And that is the thing that Tathagata has taught to us. And he didn't answer to all these questions, because they are not conducive to holy life. The next one, it is a very cute sutta, the Titta Sutta, and this is also I don't know whether you know about it, that a blind man and an elephant, and this is about the people have the people with different views, they always quarrel that my view is the right, your view is not, you know, and they always quarrel and get into trouble. Thus I have heard that on this is Titta Sutta, I have heard that on one occasion the Blessed One was staying near Savatthi in Jeta's Grove, Anathapindika's monastery. Now at that time there were many priests, contemplatives and wanderers of various sects living around Savatthi with different views, differing opinions, differing beliefs, dependent for support of their differing views. They are holding different theories, different views. Some of the priests and contemplatives held this view, this doctrine, this cosmos is eternal, only this is true, anything otherwise is worthless. We find this kind of people still around, that they kind of, no, I'm right, you are wrong, you know. Some of the priests and contemplatives held this view, this doctrine, the cosmos is not eternal, the cosmos is finite, the cosmos is infinite, the soul and the body are the same, the soul is one thing and the body another. After death, Tathagata exists. After death, Tathagata does not exist. After death, Tathagata both exist and does not exist. After death, Tathagata neither does not exist. Only this is true. Anything otherwise is worthless. And they live arguing, quarreling, and disputing, wounding one another with weapons, not really, of the mouth, saying, the dharma is like this, it is not like that. The dharma is not like that, it is like this. Then in the early morning, a large number of monks, having put on their robes and all that, they went to see the Blessed One. Lord, there are many priests, contemplatives and wanderers of various sects living around Savatthi with different views, differing opinions, differing beliefs, depending for support of their differing views. And they have to have their views, because for the royal support or somebody will give them money for their views, and you know, they were looking for some support, and they live arguing, quarreling and disputing, wounding one another with weapons of mouth, saying the dharma is like that, dharma is not like that, the dharma is not like that, it is like this. Monks and wanderers of other sects are, he says, the monks, the wanderers of other sects and blind and eyeless. They don't know what is beneficial and what is harmful. They don't know what is the Dhamma and what is non-Dhamma. Not knowing what is beneficial and what is harmful, not knowing what is Dhamma and what is non-Dhamma, they live arguing, quarreling and disputing, wounding one another with weapons of the mouth, saying this Dharma is like this, it is not like that, Dhamma is not like that, it is like this. Once in the same Savatthi, there was, and he tells a story that once there in the same Savatthi, there was a certain king who said to a certain man, get together all the people in Savatthi who have been blind from the birth. You know, he asked his servants to go get all the blind men who are blind from the birth. As you say, Your Majesty, the servant says, okay, you know, and he went around in Savatthi and gathered all the blind people from birth and went to the king and says that here are they. Very well, then show the blind people an elephant. So, okay, just go. As you say, Your Majesty, blind man replied, and he showed the blind people an elephant. To some of the blind people, he showed the head of an elephant, saying, this blind people is the elephant, is like this. To some of them, he showed the ear of an elephant, saying, this blind people, it is an elephant, is like this. To some of them, showed the tusk, the trunk, the body, a foot, hind quarters, the tail, the turf of the end of the tail, saying, this blind people is what an elephant is like that. Then having shown the blind people the elephant, the man went to the king and on arrival said, Your Majesty, the blind people have seen the elephant. May Your Majesty do what you think it is now time to do. Then the king went to the blind people and on arrivals asked them, Blind people, have you seen the elephant? Yes, Your Majesty, we have seen the elephant. Now tell me, blind people, what the elephant is like. The blind people who had been shown the head of the elephant replied, The elephant, Your Majesty, is like a water jar. Those who had been seen the ear of the elephant replied, The elephant, Your Majesty, is just like a winnowing basket. You know, that, you know, I think that is the kind of thing that you, the husk, the rice or something like that, you know, kind of like fan-like thing. Those who have seen the tusk of the elephant replied, The elephant, Your Majesty, is like an iron rod. Those who have shown the trunk of the elephant replied, The elephant, Your Majesty, is like a pole of a plow. Those who have seen the body of the elephant replied, The elephant, Your Majesty, is just like a granary. Those who have shown the foot of the elephant, Your Majesty, is just like a post. Those who have been seen the hindquarters of the elephant replied, The elephant, Your Majesty, is just like a mortar. Those who have been shown the tail of the elephant replied, The elephant is just like a pestle. Those who had been shown the turf of the end of the tail of the elephant replied, The elephant, Your Majesty, is just like a broom. Saying the elephant is like this, it is not like that. The elephant's not like that. It is like this. They struck one another with their fists. That gratified the king. In the same way, monks, the wanderers of the other sects are blind and eyeless. They don't know what is beneficial and what is harmful. They don't know what is dharma and what is not dharma. Not knowing that what is beneficial and what is harmful, not knowing what is dharma and not what is non-dharma, they live arguing, quarreling, disputing, wandering one another with weapons of the mouth, saying the dharma is like this, it is not like that. The dharma is not like that, it is like this. So here, then the realizing of the significance, that blessed one, he exclaimed, some of those so-called priests and contemplatives are attached, they quarrel and fight, people seeing one side. So the gist of the story is this, all the views are kind of one-sided, it is not complete view. And they are all wrong because of the attachment to one's own view. It leads to quarrel, it leads to all this kind of disputations and all that. But so it is not beneficial for the dharma to have the one-sided view. It is better not to have any view at all. So the next one, I'll be doing this Alagadupama Sutta. He has got two beautiful similes of water snake simile and simile of the raft. This discourse is about the clinging of view. This is also again about the clinging of the views. Its central message is conveyed in two similes. And so we will go through these two similes. The water snake simile is, I'm not reading the prelude and all that, that is starting from the which is the main point. Monks, there is a case where some worthless men studying the dharma, dialogues, narratives of mixed prose and verse, explanation, verses, spontaneous exclamations, quotations, birth stories, amazing events, questions and answer sessions, the earliest classification of the Buddha's teaching. Having studied the dharma, they don't ascertain the meaning or the purpose of these dharmas. With their discernment not having ascertained the meaning of those dharmas, with their discernment, they don't come to an agreement through pondering. They study the dharma both for attacking others and for defending themselves in debate. They don't reach the goal for which people study the dharma. Their wrong grasp of their wrong grasp of those dharmas will lead to their long-term harm and suffering. Why is that? Because of the wrong taking of the dharmas. You know, they don't understand the dharma, they hold some views, then though they don't agree with each other, they go and fight with each other. So he gives the first simile of the water snake simile. Suppose there were man needing a water snake, seeking a water snake, wandering in search of a water snake. He would see a large water snake and grasp it by the coils of the tail. The water snake turning around would bite him on the hand, on the arm, or on one of his limbs, and from that cause he would suffer death or death-like suffering. Why is that? Because of the wrong taking of the water snake. In the same way, there is a case where some worthless men study the dharma. Having studied the dharma, they don't ascertain the meaning of those dharmas with their discernment. Not having ascertained the meaning of those dharmas with their discernment, they don't come to an agreement through pondering. They study the dharma both for attacking others and for defending themselves in debate. They don't reach the goal for which people study the dharma. Their wrong grasp of those dharmas will lead to their long-term harm and suffering. Why is that? Because of wrong taking of the dharmas. But then there is the case when some clansmen study the dharma. Having studied the dharma, they ascertain the meaning of those dharmas with their discernment. Having ascertained the meaning of those dharmas with their discernment, they come to an agreement through pondering. They don't study the dharma. Dharma either for attacking others or for defending themselves in debate. They reach the goal for which people study the dharma. Their right grasp of this dharma will lead to their long-term welfare and happiness. Why is that? Because of the right taking of the dharmas. Suppose there were a man needing a water snake, seeking a water snake, wandering in search of a water snake. He would see a large water snake and pin it down firmly with a cleft stick. Having pinned it down firmly with a forked stick, he would grasp it firmly by the neck. Then no matter how much the water snake might wrap its coil around his hand, his arms, or any of his limbs, he would not form that cause suffer death or death-like suffering. Why is that? Because of the right taking of the water snake. In the same way, there is a case where some clansmen study the dharma. Having studied the dharma, they ascertain the meaning of those dharmas with their discernment. Having ascertained the meaning of those dharmas with their discernment, they come to an agreement through pondering. They don't study the dharma either for attacking others or for defending themselves in debate. They reach the goal for which people study the dharma. Their right grasp of those dharmas will lead to their long-term welfare and happiness. Why is that? Because of the right taking of the dharmas. Therefore, monks, when you understand the meaning of my statements, that is how you should remember them. But when you don't understand the meaning of my statements, then right there you should ask me or experience monks. So he again and again he kind of put this responsibility to the monks, to the listeners, that if you try to understand the dharma in the right way, and if not, please question some experienced monks or some teacher to get it right. But don't hold any wrong views. So this is the gist of the parable is that there is nothing but themselves. They are neither good or nor bad. They don't have any of their own nature. What is important that how you should hold them, how you should take them. If you take the right thing in the right way, it can be beneficial. But if you try to hold it in a wrong way, and it can cause trouble to themselves. Peter gives a very good example of everyday thing that which all handle, you know, say for instance a knife. If you take a knife, you know, you take knife not to quarrel, but just for kitchen purposes, to cut, chop up some vegetable or something. And but then you should know that which way that you should hold the knife. If you, and you, when you cut the vegetable, you hold the knife on the handle and very firmly and chop, 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 and you cut your vegetable. But if you don't know how to hold that, somebody says you should hold the knife, you know, very tightly. You hold the knife in the other way and hold it very tight, then it can cause you trouble, right? So it is the thing that it is knife by itself is neither good nor bad. It doesn't have its own nature. Neither it is no polarity here, no polarity, non-duality. It is neither good nor bad. But when you hold that, when you take it in a right way, it is beneficial. You can get your chopped vegetable. But when you hold it in a wrong way, you have instead chopped fingers probably. So that is the first parable of the water snake, that getting to take things in a right. The raft simile is this, that the monks, I will teach you the dhamma compared to a raft. Dharma is just like a raft. You know, raft is the things that you make it, you know, to cross the river for the purpose of crossing over, not for the purpose of holding onto. Listen and pay close attention, I will speak. As you say, Lord, the monks responded to the Blessed One. The Blessed One said, suppose a man were traveling along a path, he would see a great expanse of water with the near shore dubious and risky, the further shore secure and free from risk, but with neither a ferry boat nor a bridge going from this shore to the other. The thought would occur to him, here is this great expanse of water with the near shore dubious and risky, the further shore secure and free from risk, but with neither a ferry boat nor a bridge going from this shore to the other. What if I were to gather grass, twigs, branches and leaves, and having bound them together to make a raft? Where to cross over to safety on the other shore in dependence on the raft, making an effort with my hands and feet? Then the man, having gathered grass, twigs, branches and leaves, having bound them together to make a raft, would cross over to safety on the other shore in dependence on the raft, making an effort with his hand and feet. Having crossed over to the further shore, he might think, oh, how useful this raft has been to me, for it was in dependence on this raft that, making an effort with my hands and feet, I have crossed over to the safety on the further shore. Why don't I, having hoisted it on my head or carrying on my back, go wherever I like? What do you think, monks? Would the man is doing that be doing what should be done with the raft? No, Lord. And what should the man do in order to be doing what should be done with the raft? There is a case where the man, having crossed over, would think, how useful this raft has been to me, for it was in dependence on this raft that, making an effort with my hand and feet, I have crossed over to safety on the further shore. Why don't I, having dragged it on dry land or sinking it in the water, go whenever I like? In doing this, he would be doing what should be done with the raft. In the same way, monks, I have taught the dharma compared to a raft, for the purpose of crossing over, not for the purpose of holding on to. Understanding the dhamma as taught compared to a raft, you should let go even of dhammas, to say nothing of non-dhammas. So it is, it's very, very, very interesting. Actually, the Buddha's teaching is a method. It is a vehicle to understand, to cross over, cross over any obstacle. And it is not useful to hold on to the teachings. They are the means to an end, but they are not not in by themselves. So it is just like the raft, that when the purpose is served, you can discard the raft. When you understand dharma, you can discard the dharma. It's just like that, that if you think that, oh, you know, I go from this, you know, come from Chiang Mai to Athai, taking the airplane. Oh, this airplane has served me a very good purpose. I have come over. I just sit on this airplane, and you know, and I can use this, you know, for future purposes. But it is not going to bring me back, bring me here. You know, I have to discard it, get onto the next journey. You know, so that is also the teaching is like that. That when you understand the dharma fully and understand right, then dharma, then the teaching, you don't need the teaching. So I think I have finished, no? Is it okay? This 11 is done? Yeah? So I have gone through with you few of the suttas, which is, and you can find many, many suttas of, you know, you can go through internet and find, and the reading of the suttas is very beneficial. It is, it repeats. It can be, sometimes you can feel that, oh, yes, oh, I know. But its repetition is a method that, because of the oral tradition, you have to repeat things to memorize things. So also it brings you back the same. It gives you more time to pondering and contemplating when you repeat things, and of course when you go back to suttas again and again, and you find all the time you will find something new thing glimpses up, new thing lights up, you know, and you don't find it at one time, you know, every time you go something new thing pops up by itself. And so there are many, many suttas. You can explore them yourself. You can go to the library. You can go to the internet. And now there is an internet, thanks to the internet, that you don't have to really go book by book. And you can do wherever you are, at your home, at your working place, and see and study the suttas. And if you don't understand, please ask somebody. Don't come to any conclusion. Don't have your own view. You know, is the free inquiry is okay. It's very good, but don't make any wrong decision, wrong view. Okay, thank you. Yes.
Will it be all right for you?